The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the belt. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Inside this package, you'll find the star of the show, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmers features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length setting combs, and oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that you have the perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness even at the hottest summer barbecues. The Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafe ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 5.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. More wet products? Say no more. Manscaped's new Buff Bundle is all you need to keep the summer heat a breeze. The bundle includes their signature silicone scrubber and body wash. Ditch your nasty loofah and grab a taste of freshness. All
aboard! Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 84. Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here with me, Peter Harling. How you doing, Pete?
Hey, Victor. I'm good, man. It's good to be back on the show. Sorry we missed an episode last week, everybody. I was less than 100%, feeling pretty ill, and Victor's got a lot of irons in the fire in his life, too. So it just made sense to take a week off. But it's good to be back, eh?
Heck yeah, man. It's been too long, and definitely looking forward to chatting with you. Glad to hear you're feeling at least a little bit better.
Yeah. I sound like a normal person again.
That is always good.
Yeah.
And this week we're going to talk, actually the next couple episodes are going to focus around the best time of year, and that's the World Junior Championships. We have some rosters that have been finalized and released, and so we're going to talk actually today about some of the guys that didn't make, some of the prominent names that didn't make Canada and some of the other rosters, mainly Canada, but some of the other countries had some interesting snubs. And then on next week's show, we're going to actually have a bit of a crossover episode with Fantasy Hockey Life with my co-host, Jesse Sevier. And so that should be really fun. And we'll talk about all the prominent players on that episode. But today it's going to be a little bit more of the less prominent guys, eh?
Yeah, and quite frankly, you could make medal contending teams out of some of these names.
Yeah, well, they always say that Canada B team could probably win it, and that's probably true. So before we get to that point, though, let's remind everyone that this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for all the great hockey podcasts. You can use a DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on that in a bit. And we're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate lean manager for any dynasty sport you play. Completely customizable for however you want to set up your league with the great scoring categories and all the amazing draft pick trading and treasury options that come along with it. You can use the free promo code to sign up for a league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. So, Pete, when we thought of this, we thought, oh, let's have you talk about the Canada snubs and I'll talk about the USA. And the reality is that there weren't that many non-Canadian prominent snubs from this tournament, in my opinion. So you got some really good names to talk about. Some of mine that I originally outlined ended up making the team, so that ended up not being as interesting after all.
I hope you didn't do too much research on those guys. Too much prep.
No, luckily I was so busy. Phew. I didn't have time.
Oh, there you go.
But why don't we let you kick it off with some of the prominent Canada guys?
Procrastination saves the day. I like it. All right, there are some pretty big names not making Canada, and there's been a lot of chat about most of these guys, but you can't have this conversation without bringing these names up again. So the first guy I want to hit on is Beckett Seneca. He was initially a snub from the selection camp roster a few weeks ago. And then after that, he went back to the OHL and had 14 points in 3 games. Just absolutely dominated and forced his way back onto the Canadian radar, and he got an invitation to selection camp. So I think he ended up being a cut in the end. So he did not ultimately make Team Canada. And I have to think that he was probably invited because of his massive weekend that he had. But I mean, 1 weekend doesn't put you on the Canadian roster, right? You have to have a resume and a pedigree and experience with Team Canada and connection with some of the players that are on the team as well. And I'm not saying he doesn't have that, but you have to have that. And I also think it was a bit of an insurance measure by Team Canada's part for their concerns with Ethan Cowan being injured at the moment. So Bet Kitsenica was selected third overall in 2024, and he's currently eighth overall in OHL in scoring with 46 points in 27 games. So he's having a very good season. And I talked about the pedigree, so he certainly checks those boxes. He also has size that would be desirable for a tournament like this. He's 6'4", 194. He's pretty versatile. He can play defensively. He kills penalties. I was just at an Oshawa game last month, and this was in mind when I was watching him play. And I was, okay, how do they deploy him in Oshawa? And it was as much as they could, as often as they could in any situation. All special teams, a regular shift, double shifted him at times. Like he was everywhere on the ice. So the main argument I can think of for that I'm hearing anyways for his omission from the Canadian roster is that if he isn't on the top line and he doesn't fit in deeper down, right? Like they're not picking an all-star team, they're picking a team and they want role players and role positions. And I guess the theory here is that that Seneca is a top six player, a first or second line winger for Canada as an offensive physical kind of player, and if he's not in that role, then he doesn't fit in the bottom six. I'm kind of calling BS on that, Victor. I don't really agree with that. I mean, if you look at who their top six wingers probably are in this tournament, it's the first line is going to have Cowan and probably McKenna on it with a line with Catton. That would be my guess. And the second line, you've got Richie, Carson Rakoff, and Nadeau, I suppose. But like, I can make an argument for Seneca knocking out Nadeau and Rakoff, even though Nadeau's got some experience in the American Hockey League this year and whatnot. But just because Seneca is not in the American Hockey League doesn't mean that he couldn't be producing at that level as well. I think he would. And then you look at the bottom six, and you've got guys like Cataford, Pennelly, Lyshenko, Cole Beaudoin. Like, I think that Beckett Seneca could play a good two-way role. He's got the speed, he's got the intensity, he's got the hockey sense. I think I've seen him play good defensively at the OHL level. I think he would be very amenable to playing that type of a role. And obviously, if he gets an offensive situation, he's got the skills and the confidence to convert and cash in and make the most of those chances and opportunities when they arise. So I think that of all the players not making Canada, Seneca is the biggest omission, in my opinion, and the first player that should get a call up to the roster if there is an injury. What do you think about my assessment on the Seneca situation?
Well, I don't disagree with anything you said, other than if we're picking the biggest snubs, I think I might have to go with Parekh personally, which I know you'll get to later. But in terms of the forwards, I don't think there's another option, really. Like, I think, as you outlined, it's not like he's a one-dimensional player, which you pointed out. He's versatile. He can play various roles. He's got the size, he's got the physicality, he can add scoring even if he's playing on a third or fourth line. It just doesn't really make sense to me. Is this just because, oh, Anaheim reached and he shouldn't have gone that high and they just want to galaxy brain this? I don't really understand it. I know that they want guys in certain roles, and I get that, But it sounds to me like you're telling me Beckett couldn't play that role, and I'd any role you want him to, and I don't believe that.
Yeah, me neither. That doesn't hold water with me. I think he could fit in a bottom six role on Canada's roster quite nicely. I think he could fit in a top six role quite nicely as well. I that's one of the most attractive things about Seneca is his versatility, along with his high upside. Okay, so let's talk about the guy that you just brought up then. Let's skip over to Zane Parekh. So like Beckett Seneca, he was initially a snub from the selection camp and ended up being invited to the selection camp. And I believe that there might have been some concerns about an injury there too. I forget which player it was. But anyways, Parekh ended up getting invited to the selection camp, and when the music stopped, he didn't have a chair either. He was a final cut. So with Parekh, obviously the offensive upside is through the roof with this dude. He knows how to generate offense from the power play. And having him as a PP1 driver would be advantageous to Canada. And it may seriously regret this snub if they're in a game and they're down a goal and they get a late period power play and can't convert on it. They might be thinking to themselves, rats frats, we should have had Parekh on the roster here. He could have maybe made the difference on this power play. That said, though, he does have some liability as a defensive player. And you and I have talked about that at length on this podcast and in pre-draft episodes last year. And I don't think his defensive liabilities are egregious. I think there are some times where he makes some bad decisions, and offensive players take risks and take chances. And most of the time with Parekh, those translate and they convert into offense and chances and goals. But sometimes they go horribly wrong and blow up and create turnovers and odd man rushes and et cetera. And you got to take the good with the bad. But in a short tournament like this, the timing of those bads can sometimes make the difference between what level of medal you play for, or if you even play for a medal, if you give up a very, very bad goal and a very, very bad timing and situation. So I get the sensitivity to that. The other concern I have here, and this is kind of my biggest concern with Parekh, actually, Victor, is I think his biggest holdback is his potential to take a very bad penalty or perhaps earn a suspension. I mean, he's not a player that has a golden record when it comes to his on-ice performance. He's had some incidents that were a little off color. He's had some suspensions. And I wonder if Canada was, having shades of Trevor Connolly and thinking to themselves, is there a chance that we take this guy and he does some, he has a, gets caught up in the emotion of the tournament. It's a highly emotional, high stakes tournament. It's very fast paced. They're going to be playing in Canada at the center of the rink the Senators play at, TD Center, I think it is now. And so there's going to be a lot of emotionally charged games for Canada. And, you want players who you can handle that and won't take risks that way. And I'm not 100% sure. I'm not saying he's as risky as Trevor Connolly, but there is some risk there with this player. And he would be sort of a one-dimensional player for him. He would be, I think, mainly insulated for the power play and used sparingly at even strength in the bottom six pairing there. So that's kind of my read on the Parekh take. And, quite frankly, when you look at the defensive of roster that they have, I don't really have a problem with this snub. I'm okay with this one. I can understand and live with this one. You have a bigger problem with this, so I'd love to hear if you are seeing something that I'm missing.
Well, I don't disagree with what you said, real in totality. I do think there's some potential concerns, and he is an emotional, fiery player, which can really help drive you over the line, or it can blow up. And we've seen both ways. So I'm sure whichever way it would have gone, people would have been feeling justified and or feeling like validated in their opinions. And I get the idea that it could. You could have a Trevor Connolly situation, and that would be pretty awful. I think that the difference for me is that, first of all, I'm not so sure that he would have an issue like that. I mean, we saw him play in some pretty high leverage situations last year on en route to the Memorial Cup, and he was just fine. There
Yeah.
wasn't any issues with that. And I think that he has shown that he knows how to come up to the line. He certainly has let the motion get the best of him during the regular season and at other times, but when it has really mattered, he has not cost the team. In fact, he has been part of the reason his team has succeeded. And the other thing is, I just look at the rest of this defensive roster and like, who is their no doubt power play quarterback? I don't love the other options. I think that they're fine. I think Sam Dickinson is fine. I think Matthew Schaefer is fine. I think that they could be fine in that situation. But Zane Parekh is so dynamic and so uniquely skilled to run that top power play with all those really amazing forwards. I just think it would be massive value added, even if they only played him in a third pairing role with a strong two-way defender. I think that would have been a massive boost. When you need a power play goal and you might be down in a situation or in a gold medal in a medal round where you really need to create some offense, I think he could be that boost that they could be missing.
Yeah, for sure. There's risk in not taking him like I laid out. If you're down a goal and you've got a power play and it's the clock is working against you, he's the guy you want running your power play, right? Like you want someone that's going to take some chances and generate some offensive opportunity for you. And I think, the crossing the line concerns of taking bad penalties or even worse suspensions, I think that's a very small risk, and I'd like to think that it wouldn't be a huge factor in Team Canada's decision, but I would be surprised if they didn't have conversation about it. And I don't know, I just look at the other players that they have on the roster, and while none of them can hold a candle to the offensive opportunity that Parekh can generate, none of them have liabilities or holes in their games, right? They're all very talented offensive players. They're all very reliable defensive players. They all have good size and mobility. It really gives Canada a nice, solid through and through defense core. There isn't, a player you can look at that says, yeah, but that guy's could be kind of risky. And I think that gave them a really warm, fuzzy feeling with their defense and their roster. Because I'm not sure, I'm not 100% sold that Canada has the best or second or third best goaltending in this tournament, too, right? Like, it's not terrible, but there isn't anyone on Canada that gives me super warm, fuzzy feelings like, good luck scoring on Canada. So I think they really wanted to shore up their defense. Okay, so speaking of defense, and while we're on Canada, I'll just kind of hold the conch here for one more player at least. And I kind of wanted to segue Parekh into Carter Yakimchuk. He's the only other defenseman that I want to talk about for Canada. He's the only other defenseman I think that was really close in making the roster. Cam Allen is the other one that gets a lot of consideration for a snub. But between me and you, Victor, and I guess anyone listening to this podcast, I don't really think that Cam Allen was a snub. I don't think he's in the realm of consideration for this roster myself. Carter Yakimchuk, however, let's talk about him. He was the last year's draft was a very rich in defense draft. And, that's how it was heralded as a great draft for defense in the first round. And he was the second defenseman overall selected in the draft at seventh overall, ahead of Zane Parekh, Ziv Bouyim, and Sam Dickinson, and some other worthwhile names as well. After the draft, he had the rookie camp with the Sens and was turned some heads there. It was very impressive. Went to the prospect tournament that the Sens participated in and also attended the Senators training camp and played some preseason. And like he was very, very good, very impressive. And there was a lot of consideration for the Sens to keep him and throw him into the NHL right away, right out of the draft. Ultimately, they decided that there's no sense in rushing him, and they returned him back to junior. But he was very close to making the NHL right out of the draft. He brings size, mobility, and offense from the blue line, and he's got just howitzer of a shot, right? Like he's got a clapper. He also brings some risk in the defensive game at times. I get that. We talked about that with Parekh, and I think it's even more pronounced with Yakimchuk. I think Parekh's defensive game is more reliable than Yakimchuk's because Parekh's smarter and has, I think, maybe better skating ability, better mobility than Yakimchuk. So I think he can get himself out of bad situations a little bit quicker and easier than Yakimchuk can, even though that Yakimchuk's got the size advantage. I'm also okay with this player not getting a roster spot, though, Victor. When you look at it, take a look at the roster, like I was saying with Parekh, and the defenders that all made the cut bring you that nice variety and balance of size, defense, and offense, and upside to their game, like up and down. There's just not really a liability. So while you have a player like Yakimchuk, who is a much higher profile player, being the seventh overall pick from the draft, but watch this tournament, and I bet by the time it ends, you won't have any issues with the play of guys that did make the roster ahead of him. And I'm talking about, lesser known names in the prospect world like Bo Akey and Andrew Gibson and Sawyer Migno. Even if you haven't heard of these guys before now, I think they'll be a much more, you're going to know their name by the end of the tournament. And you might not have them as in high fantasy upside regard as Yakimchuk after the World Juniors. You might say, yeah, they had a good tournament. Yeah, I see the appeal with them, but I still think Yakimchuk is going to be the better NHL player. That's probably true. But I think for this tournament, I don't really have any concern with the defensive selection overall on Team Canada. Do you kind of see it that way too, or do you think this was another Canada's going to want to do over on this pick too?
No, this one I'm totally fine with because I definitely feel, unlike Parekh, I feel like Yakimchuk brings a significant amount of risk in his two-way play. And while it might be worth it to have some more offense, and I think he is more offensively talented than any other defenders, he also has more defensive holes than any of the other defenders they're bringing. So that to me would be a big risk. Risk benefit ratio that may not be worth it. So I could totally understand this one, especially as you said, with maybe, not having an absolute stud in the goalie. I think their goaltending is fine, but if they want to really make sure they have a good chance by having a great, great set of two-way defenders to best help their goalies, then Yakimchuk doesn't fit into that. I still think that Parekh is a better defender than a lot of people give him credit for, particularly with his stick and his gaps and how he defends. He's not as physical and mean maybe as Yakimchuk is in some ways, but yeah, I still have more of a problem with Parekh just because I think he brings a lot more of that value added without the huge risk. But I understand the argument in terms of, like you said, there are a lot of names that Canada is bringing on the back end that I think are just strong two-way defenders that, maybe aren't the most exciting, but will get the job done. And the best thing you can say about a two-way defender, at least from the defensive end, is that you didn't really notice them. And I think that there are a lot of guys on that back end that, at least in their own zone, you probably won't notice as much. And that could be a good thing because the last thing you want is to missed assignment or just a bad read and let a guy walk down the slot and get a good shot. So that hopefully will be minimized with the guys that they're bringing.
All right. Do you want to wrap up Canada or do you want to do the rest of the world and finish with a couple more Canadians? How do you want to do this?
Well, let's let you finish with your list.
All right. So I think from a personal point of view, the player that I'm most disappointed didn't make Team Canada's roster is Tidje Genla. The injury makes this a far more forgivable sin, of course, that he's out with season-ending hip injury. And yes, the omission of Iginla was made before the injury shut him down for the season. So that's why I wanted to kind of bring him up and have a little conversation with him. I suspect Hockey Canada was aware, at least to some extent, of the severity of his injury. And so because of that, they weren't really giving him serious consideration. Also remember, though, that on the bright side, he's still eligible to play in the World Juniors next year in, I think it's in the States somewhere, Minnesota, I think. So he's eligible for the 26 World Juniors as well. So if he's not in the NHL next season, we could see him at the World Juniors next year at the peak of his junior powers. What do you think about that?
Oh yeah, definitely. He should be there. I do agree with you too. I am pretty sure that Hockey Canada knew that he was dealing with something, and that was part of the calculus and not including him. And then it was announced that he was shut down soon after that.
Yeah.
And you are right, by the way. It is going to be in Minnesota, as far as I can tell. St. Paul, Minneapolis in 2026.
Yeah, that's going to be a good tournament. That should be a good host city. All right, another Canadian I want to hit on, as much to say about Tiz. He's injured, so he can't be there. Andrew Kristall is a very interesting player to discuss in this conversation, Victor. He is second only to Gavin McKenna in WHL scoring with 52 points in 22 games, and he is number one in power play goal points per game, I should say, with a bullet at 2.36 points per game, and Gavin McKenna is second at an even two. So, this is a player who has some pretty strong pedigree to his name too. It's not like he's come out of nowhere to do this. He's been a prolific offensive scoring player throughout his junior career. So why was he cut from Canada and not even invited to the selection camp roster? Well, there's a couple reasons that I think are pretty well documented, but size is number one. He's 5'10", 183 pounds, so he's a little on the undersized side there. An even more important reason, I think, is his compete level comes into question at times. His effort level has been highly criticized at times, as a matter of fact. And in a short tournament like this, you really, unless you're playing Kazakhstan, you can maybe turn the heat down for that game. But a short tournament like this, you've got to be able to bring it 100% all the time. You don't get second chances in the medal round. An even bigger concern, I think, that's a little bit more of a consistent one is his defensive shortcomings. He's just flat out a liability at times. His defensive consciousness is, I don't know if it's Ryan Merkley bad, but it's not good. And last but not least, his skating. His speed and skating is below average speed for what we're going to see at the speed and pace of this tournament. So while his offensive upside is about as good as you can possibly want it to be, and he's a guy that can generate offense for you. And if Canada's having trouble scoring goals in this tournament, there's going to be a lot of people out there that look at the stats and say, "Well, duh, why didn't they take Andrew Kristall? That's a guy that can get you some points." Well, yes, he does score a lot, but I think the combination of all of these negatives and concerns far outweigh any offense that he can bring you. If it's a point a game offensive player, is hard to reject off your roster. But we're talking about Canada here, right? It's not like they're short of other options of players that can produce offense at that rate. And I'm looking at you, Gavin McKenna, Berkeley Catton, Easton Cowan, Carson, excuse me, Braden Yeager. Like, they've got guys that can carry the mail offensively. Excuse me, sorry about that. So, all those negatives compiled far outweigh the positive, and the positive is undervalued because there's other guys that can do exactly that. So I have absolutely no problem with Andrew Kristall being a snub from this roster, despite his outrageous offensive production. In fact, Victor, quite frankly, I think, I would be a little bit more perturbed if he had made the team. I'd have more concerns about it if he were on Team Canada than that he's off. Is that offside, or do you kind of even see it the same way?
No, I definitely agree with you on this one, and I agree with the concerns. He's a pretty unidimensional player, and if you could really isolate him and give him a specific role, it could be really good. But when you're limited in how many players you can take in a tournament like this, when you need guys who can play, specific roles and potentially even different roles, I totally agree. The guys you have at the top of the lineup who can provide you that scoring that Canada brought don't have those deficiencies and aren't going to be a liability two-way. I don't see any reason to have that risk with Cristal because, yeah, quite frankly, if you had him out there and he wasn't back checking or lax on a play, it could literally cost you the tournament, you know? And that's not acceptable. So I don't, no problem with this one. And I think I agree with you too, just in the sense of if they had brought him, it probably would have raised more questions for me.
Yeah, I'm gonna sneak one more Canadian player in here that's not on the show notes that I didn't prep for, but I think we have to talk about this guy real quick. Michael Misa. I mean, they took some draft eligible guys in and Porter Martone and Matthew Schaefer and D-1 Gavin McKenna, right? So they've got plenty of young guys on the roster, which I guess they decided that they had their quota of younger guys and they wanted older, more aged and experienced, mature guys. But quite frankly, Michael Misa was one of the best players at the CHL and national team all-star game that I just went to in Oshawa, and we talked about that on a show. And you know, he's having a super awesome, tremendous season. 61 points in 29 games. He's on pace for 139 points. He's pretty versatile. He can play center or wing. So you've got some options there. You're not locked into a guy that's only a center or couldn't move over to the middle in a situation if you needed it. And one of the most impressive things about him that I've seen this season from the games that I've watched, Victor, is his attention to detail. He is just a detail-oriented player, and that's what you want in a tournament like this. A guy that gets it, that is all about puck possession and details and puck support, defensive support. He does all these things. I wonder, you know, there's a lot of talk about his interest or Boston University's interest, at least, of recruiting him for next season. I wonder if Hockey Canada is making an example of that with this player and saying, look, man, if you think you're going to leave CHL early to go play NCAA, you can kiss your Canadian international tournament roster spot goodbye. You think the politics entered this decision at all, or was it simply a numbers game?
Well, first of all, I'm offended that you took one of my guys because that was going to be one of mine.
Oh, shit.
But
Well,
I
this is a
took it.
segue. I'll just start talking about your guy and then you can make all your points.
There weren't enough non-Canadians. I had to take one, but no.
Clearly, I studied the show notes thoroughly.
Well, you didn't look at my guys, which is fair. No, I that is a really interesting point, and I hadn't considered that as much. I'm a little confused by the omission too, and I think that that may be part of it.
Yeah.
Maybe they are waving that, dangling that carrot or waving that flag to him, like, hey, you know, this could be an issue for you. It's also possible that I think Cam reported something that there may be something already in place. They're just not going to announce it, you know,
Yeah.
until later. And it's quite possible that they already know and they're already punishing him for that. I think
Right.
that's
That's,
possible. I think
yeah,
it's
that's what I'm
frankly.
saying.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous that they aren't taking him. I mean, just looking at some of the guys that they are taking over him, like Matthew Cataford, Tanner Howe, in particular, those two, like Michael Misa offers more already. You know, he's, as you mentioned, his details to his game. That's always been the thing that impresses me the most. He doesn't cheat any aspect of the game. He is just really solid no matter where you put him. Anything you ask him to do, he can do it. He was such an important piece of that Saginaw Championship, just playing a depth role to a T. And but he has so much more to give too. And you're seeing it now, the offense, the dynamic play. I think that probably is part of it. And I think it's kind of unfortunate. I get that they're taking three other draft eligibles, but, and I'm not saying that Misa should go, well, actually two draft eligibles and one not even eligible this year, right? With Schaefer. I mean,
McKenna.
with McKenna, sorry. I do think that those guys deserve to come, but I also think Misa deserves to come over at least Cataford or Howe, and maybe even someone like Pennelly or Nadeau, Nadeau has a very specific role, you know, and that can be good, but also Misa is going to provide so much more value 90% of the time that Nadeau is not doing as much. And so That just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, and I think you're right on the nail on the head
Just to
there.
clarify something for people who might not be as familiar with Endo, what is the one specific thing you're saying that Endo's bringing?
He's a scorer. Like, he's got a great shot. So
Right.
that for and but and his off puck game has gotten a lot.
Mises a goal a game player. Like, I think he can do that just as good, if not better.
And then but in the off puck game, I think Nadeau has gotten a lot better. He's rounding that out. But I think Misa's off puck game is already way better than
He's
Nadeau's.
already there. Yeah, I agree with you, man. I this one's a bit of a head scratcher for me too, dude.
Yeah. So, maybe they were just like, either there's too many, young guys, or more likely, I think it's the NCAA thing and just like, yeah, you're gonna go that route. We're not gonna reward you. We're gonna punish you. And that's unfortunate.
I'd like to think that's not what it is, because I think he's, with where the rules are now with the NCAA allowing CHL players in, he's well within his rights to move to the NCAA and play a season there. If he thinks that's in the best interest of his development as a hockey player and as a person going to college and having the college experience and getting college education as a 18-year-old young man, I how is that punitive behavior? I don't have an answer. I don't that's I guess that's a rhetorical question. I don't have an answer for that. I don't think there is one. Like, I get that Hockey Canada wants its premium players to play in their system and sell tickets and generate revenue for them. But you also want to win this tournament. And I think having Misa on the roster increases their chances than, some of the other guys who are supplemental players deeper down the roster. I totally agree with you here, Victor. I'm sorry I stole your guy. Who's next on your list?
It's okay. He was worth talking about.
Yeah. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours.
So, all right, all the Canadian fans, you can turn the show off now because we're going to talk about non-Canadians.
No. Oh yeah, we did do all the Canadians. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Just kidding. You should still listen. Don't
You
go away.
should. You should.
All right, so there, like I said, there weren't too many interesting. I think some of the non-Canadians are a little less interesting, but I also want to frame this in the context of, are we worried about these guys not making their squad? Like, does this affect their fantasy stock? What's going on here? And the first guy certainly raises those questions, and that's Quentin Musty. Quentin Musty, he was snubbed last year after a 102-point season in the OHL, almost 2 points per game. And I think this is clearly one of those situations where he's playing in the OHL, and the Hockey USA tends to frown upon that. And so that was, I'm sure, a big part of it. This season, there was a lot of issues with him. He was with the Sharks camp for a little bit, didn't make it into any games, and then he was holding out for a trade from Sudbury, which didn't happen. Finally, he's gotten in the lineup, and he's almost 2 points per game. So he's scoring, but the word was that even before he broke his hand, which he's injured now, so he wouldn't be able to play anyways. But even before that, he wasn't going to be invited and wasn't going to be part of the consideration even, which seems crazy because, quite frankly, he does seem like one of the best prospects that the USA has. I mean, maybe not like top line, but he certainly should be in that middle six of their best players. And so he certainly seems like he could provide a lot of value there. I'm not sure that this raises major concerns for me because I think that it is a big part of the he's playing in the OHL, so we're gonna not look as favorably upon him. But you just look at the production and everything he's done. He looks fantastic. His hockey prospecting looks pretty great. He's up at 40% chance of being a star. In fact, I was looking at comps for him, And he actually looks a lot like Ray Whitney, who was one of the OG draft picks for the Sharks, and he was a star producer in the league. He was also a bit of a smaller guy, which Musty isn't, but I think there's some good likelihood of a good producer there. His PNHLE is hovering around 80. That's looking pretty good. By the way, we just updated our Fantasy Hockey Life player cards, and this new version has Fenwick and turnovers and power play shots and a bunch of cool things on there. And bottom line is Quinn Musty shoots a ton, but he doesn't really hit or block as much, which is funny because he's kind of a feisty guy, but he doesn't hit as much. He definitely has in the past gotten a lot of pims, which has had been an issue for him. But overall, to me, I don't think this affects my valuation of him. I still think he can be a top sixer. He might end up being more of a middle sixer, but I think he has the talent to be a top line player. There may be some attitude things, but also like I get not wanting to, like wanting to have a chance to win and to compete for an OHL championship. So I understand that part. What about you, Pete? Do you downgrade his projection a little bit for Quentin Musty?
I really like Musty. I think he is a star player and will be a star player. The only two things I can think of that would be factors that would lead USA to not want to bring him are his defensive game isn't great. It's a work in progress. And at a tournament like this, you want more refined finished works of art as opposed to works in progress when it comes to those elements of the game. And you kind of hit on the other one there. I think it could be a political thing. USA seldom takes players from the CHL. They really favor their NCAA and USHL players and national team players and whatnot. They like their homegrown product. So, he's injured, so it's irrelevant, right? Even if they invited him to the shortlist camp, he still is injured and wouldn't have been able to play. Injury aside, if he was 100% healthy and he didn't make the final cut, or if he wasn't invited to the selection camp roster, I think that is a egregious oversight on part of USA and not taking a player of his potential and upside in a tournament like this, do so at your own risk. I haven't got the American roster up in front of me, but it's going to be a pretty formidable roster, right? It's not like we're talking about Kazakhstan said no to him. USA is a pretty dynamic roster as well, and they have got plenty of star power on their roster. So I'd have to take a look at the roster and say, well, I'd take him over these five guys 100 times out of 100 in order for it to be that egregious of an omission. But yeah, I got. He'd be on my American roster if it was my call and he were healthy.
Well, I have some names for you. Austin Bernevik.
Right.
That's one guy they brought ahead of him. Christopher Pelosi. AJ Spilacci.
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 I think it's that's how I say it, but I'm often wrong.
Joey Willis. Brody Ziemer. Like, those guys are fine, like depth players, but
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Like, if Quinn Musty can certainly play on your third line if you want him to. Even some of the other guys like Brandon Svoboda, fellow Sharks prospect. Yeah, he's been great,
Yeah.
so far. He's opened some eyes in the NCAA, and he is, a smidge older, but is he better than Musty? I don't think so. I mean, what I saw at the top prospects game, it wasn't even close. Like those he was Svoboda was good, but Musty was incredible. It wasn't even the same conversation. And then you got, Trevor Connolly, who had those issues last year. So I don't know. I think there were some curious choices that, I mean, to not even invite him to camp. I get the injury part. Yeah, that's not that's the it's kind of moot now. But to not even invite him and to have that prejudice to me kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I would like Quentin Musty in my bottom six. I'll say that because of his defensive game, but I'm sure I'd find a spot for him in my top six.
Yeah, well, you can always pair him with a strong defensive forward if you need to. I mean, no one's replacing Higgins, Leonard, and Perreault. So,
Right.
then you're looking at, Cole Yzerman is probably your second line left wing, and Oliver Moore is probably your second line center. So then, is he better than Svoboda or, Zimer or Brnovic? I would say yes.
Yeah, me too.
So that seems a little off to me. All right, but well, we can't change that now, and he is injured. But anyways, I would say if you're worried, or if anyone in your league is panicking that Quinton Musty sucks now because he didn't make this team,
Wrong.
go acquire him. It'll be fine. All right. So some of the other initially, though, Adam Juracek wasn't on the Czechia team, which was a bit surprising, but he ended up getting added afterwards. I don't want to spend a lot of time on Juracek because he is on the team, but he is going to be a guy that is going to be very interesting to watch because he really hasn't played much hockey in the last year. If you remember, he went to the World Juniors last year as a draft eligible and tore his knee up just like his brother did, unfortunately. And he has been back for Brantford of the OHL just recently and has 6 games in, 3 points in those 6 games. In fact, I checked a little while ago, he had no points in his first 4 games, I think. So these 3 points must have come in the last couple games. But anyways, he is going to be an interesting player to watch, and he did get added, and so not worth talking about him, but a fun player to watch during the tournament. But
Please
a
stay
guy,
healthy.
yes, please don't get injured this time. The guy, I think, a guy that is interesting to talk about is Dominik Badinka, and so he didn't get invited, is not playing. And a little bit about him, if you don't remember, 6 foot 3, 185-pound, right-handed D. He was drafted by the
Carolina.
Carolina Hurricanes, and he was drafted. Oh man, I thought I had this queued up, but
Second round in 24.
yes, pretty early, right? So 34th
Yeah, draft
overall.
pedigree there for sure.
Pretty early. He's been playing in the SHL so far this season, a little bit with the J20. Last year in his draft eligible season, he also played in the SHL 33 games. He's not scoring a ton, but he is driving play pretty darn well in terms of his Fenwick, and he's playing in a really tough league. I think the big thing is that in the past, at least what I could gather is that he had refused to play for the Czechia international team. And so this was basically a retribution that they did not want him to play. They did not invite him because he had shunned the national team in the past. So again, another one of those situations where Dominik Badinka is going to be an NHLer, in my opinion. I think he's clearly shown he can already compete as a 19-year-old in one of the best leagues in the world. I don't know that he's going to be a big scorer. So if that's something that you're worried about, you probably are right to be worried about that. He hasn't shown a lot of offense, but he's shown that he can shut down some of the best forwards in the SHL. And so that's really positive. I pulled up a hockey prospecting comp for him, and he looks a lot like Jakub Zboril, who was a Czech drafted by the Boston Bruins, that famous draft when was another draft they could have had like Barzal and a bunch of other top players, and they picked him, and he ended up being a bust. He was kind of a tweener, and he ended up had playing some games, but he didn't really quite work out. So I think Badinka is going to play more likely, but I'm not sure that he has the offense to translate right now. His PNHL is like 20, and his Bash isn't even that good. So he might be one of these guys who just, plays a lot but doesn't put up a lot of stats. So that one's kind of interesting looking at at Czechia's team. They have some interesting names. In the last tournament, Tomáš Galvis was a really big head turner, more of a defensive defenseman, but really solid. They have a couple guys that are like that. I think everyone's going to be looking mainly at Juracek, but there's some other drafted prospects on here, Jakub Dvorak and Jakub Figber and Vojtěch Port. So those are some of the drafted guys. I'm not sure that any of them are super exciting offensively, but it's interesting that they decided that they could bring all those guys and some other guys that we haven't heard of as much, more so than Dominik Badinka. What do you think about all that, Pete?
I've got a lot more understanding for political reasons for not taking a player because he refused to play for the national team in previous tournaments, whatever those were, U18s or Hlinka maybe. And then, World Juniors comes around and, you've already said no to our program. You're on our do not pick list now. Sorry, dude. That's your fault. As opposed to wanting to play in the SHL or the NCAA or the CHL. Yeah, this is a player not being in this tournament from a fantasy point of view. I'm can't see I'm gonna miss him. I think he's got good NHL upside, and maybe in a bangers league, there's a little bit more interest there. And I like Carolina's ability to identify and draft and develop prospects. So is I like his potential to play in the NHL. I don't see a high fantasy upside with this player. So the fact that he's not going to be in this tournament doesn't really hurt my feelings.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't think we're gonna miss him in fantasy too much, but it would. I think he would have really helped that team. So that's the part that. But I get it. Like you said, if he hadn't been good to the national team.
Yeah, I think that holds water.
Yeah. All right. I just have one more. Like I said, there weren't really that many other really interesting snubs that I saw. But this one is interesting, I think. Leo Salin Wallenius, who was drafted last draft, 2024, by the Sharks. He was taken 53rd overall in the second round. One of the many good defensemen that were available last year. And he was one who was a little bit more offensive, I would say. He had a little bit more of that leaning towards him, but he is also billed as a good puck mover, good skater, decent two-way. It's certainly not like an all offensive kind of guy. And this season, he's 6'3", 183-pound left-handed D. And I don't know if part of the decision was lefty righty, because looking at their roster, they have four lefties and three righties. And so maybe there were just too many lefties. I guess that's possible. But there's one undrafted player who's 19 on the roster, and Leo Salin Wallenius was drafted, so that was kind of interesting. There was no political sort of retribution or anything that I could find about not including him. You tell me if you found anything different, Pete. But last year, Leo Salin Wallenius dominated the J20 league. He was really great, and I'm sure that was part of what helped get him drafted so early. He was had 42 points in 43 games. He didn't have any SHL or Hockey Svenskan time last season. But this season, he started out in the J20, dominated again, had a cup of coffee in the SHL, but has primarily been playing in the Hockey Svenskan and has been doing pretty well there. It's a pretty difficult league for him. And so he kind of has this mixture, no points in the SHL, dominant in the J20, half point per game in the Hockey Svenskan. He isn't playing very much in the SHL, just 9 minutes with no power play time. He's just driving play really well, though. And so I'm just wondering if this is like they felt maybe his offensive skill set was redundant with Axel Sandin Palicka there. They have some really strong defensive defensemen with Theo Lindsay and Tom Villander. And some of the other guys are pretty decent two-way guys, too. So maybe they just felt like, yeah, we don't really need the offense. And some of the other guys bring more in other ways. Thinking about where he is right now, his equivalencies have kind of dropped because he just hasn't scored as much this year, but that could correct itself. But right now, his best comp in the hockey prospecting model looks like a Damon Severson type, someone who is pretty decent puck mover, has some offense, but it's never too exciting. In most leagues, it's kind of like a waiver wire kind of thing. And his PNHLE is hovering around 40. Looking at his Bash, it's pretty low. He's not really hitting or blocking too much, although he does shoot a fair amount. So all in all, I'm not sure this changes too much for him, although I think the stock down in general for Leo Salin Wallenius is a little bit low. I was kind of hoping he'd be in this tournament and raise his stock a little bit and show a little bit more, but that's not going to happen. So we have to wait and see how the rest of his time in Sweden goes. What do you think, Pete? Thoughts on Leo Salin Wallenius?
Yeah, I think, I don't have a huge file on him, but I think he's a snub for sure. I'm pretty familiar with the name and he's got pedigree and he's on the radar. And then so, okay, so if he's a snub, like who are the other players on the Swedish roster? And you mentioned ASP, Theo Lindstein, and Tom Welander. Those are three names I got no problem being ahead of him on the roster. But that's three out of seven. You got four more guys, and quite frankly, I don't really know anything about Rasmus Bergqvist, Viggo Gustafsson, Willem Hallqvist, and Alex Hertig. Like, I'd have taken him over probably any of these guys without doing enough research on them. I'm kind of speaking without a lot of knowledge on these guys, but I have to think that there's probably a reason why I've heard of Linus Sahlin Wallenius and not those other guys. So I'm just gonna go with that.
Yeah, that seems fair.
Yeah.
Well, those are all the guys we had. Hopefully you find that interesting. And we're going to talk next show all about the guys that are most exciting. When we do our crossover show, we're going to be doing a draft of the players, five forwards, three D, one goalie, and talking all about the most interesting players who are in the tournament. So that's going to be fun, right, Pete?
Yes, and you've already determined the draft order, and I pick last. I've never ever in any of my fantasy leagues in any draft had the first overall pick ever.
Well, I knew that, so I just made sure you pick last.
There's something to be said about tradition. I like that. Yeah. Although, screw you, I got the first pick in the second round. Ha ha. Joke's on
Yeah,
you.
you're gonna. Sometimes that can be good. It can be good because I don't know
Yeah.
that there's like a surefire, like definitely gonna be the highest scorer in this tournament kind of thing. Like I think there are a few options, and so picking at the
Yeah.
turn might be really good.
Maybe. Maybe. We'll find out shortly.
Yeah, we'll do.
All right, Victor. Well, I'm looking forward to having that draft episode and picking some players. So gotta go do a little research. Gotta get more in sync with the players in the tournament and maybe do a little homework and figure out who my sleeper picks could be. Because you can't just pick all the star players. You gotta win it with the underdogs.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll see. We'll see. All right. Well, sorry again that I stole your player off your list there. That was very uncool of me. I'll try not to do that again in the future. I guess that's it for this episode, everybody. Want to say thanks for listening and for feedback on the show. If you want to reach out to us, you can catch us on Twitter or X at DPR underscore show. I'm at Farling. Victor is Victor Nuno 12. And our producer, Jim, who will be on next episode, is Jim IKEHW. Don't forget to follow HockeyPodNet. There's other good shows on there. If you haven't heard already, Cam Robinson and Chris Peters just launched a new show as well. And that is must listen material. Please subscribe to this show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Give us a 5-star review. Drop us a comment. We'll read the comments on the show. If you leave us some, that'd be nice. And until then, we'll see you on the next episode. Keep your stick on the ice.